and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for September 8th. It's brought to you by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and pinch hitting for Jim Allen and sitting in with me from the Bay Area is MPB tracker Patrick Newman. Thanks for joining us, bud. How you doing?
Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure as always. And I'm looking forward to just talking some baseball with you.
Excellent, excellent. We thank you for waking up early in the morning for us. I know it's early on Sunday morning for you. It's Sunday evening here in Tokyo. And for those of you who don't recall, Patrick is the MPB tracker. He's on Twitter, and you do a blog as well, right?
I used to. I would like to do it again someday.
So we'll just say that you do the blog, and then it's updated periodically.
Yeah, it's around. The archives are available.
Archives only, it sounds like. All right.
Yeah, well, eventually I aspire to pick it up again. We'll see if free time permits that.
Okay, excellent, excellent. On this week's show, we've got an interview with Big Cam Mikolayo of the Hiroshima Carp, and we're going to discuss the retirement of Atsunori Inaba and the achievement of Masahiro Yamamoto and a whole bunch more. So let's get started.
Okay, so I'm going to tie together the two of the big events this week, the cycle of Rosario and Inaba's retirement. So on July 1st, 2003, Atsunori Inaba hit for the cycle. And 2003 was a notable year. It had many cycles. It had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, including Inaba's. So I want to see how many of those you can recall. And for bonus points, there's another guy who hit a cycle on the same day as Inaba. And if you can remember him, you score the bonus points.
Just for the record, I have no idea that year because that's the year that I moved back to the States. So, but I'm going to take my guesses. In 2003, and I'm going to say Shinjo, Tsuyoshi Shinjo.
Shinjo is in the States that year, so this is MPB only.
MPB only, okay. Now you got me. That was my only guess.
I didn't know you were in the States that year.
I know, I've talked about it on the show a few times, but who would care?
The show, but I'm not that big a fan. I haven't heard every word of it.
Thank you? Inaba, see, I didn't even realize Inaba had a cycle and the same day.
And there was also a cycle the next day as well. Yeah, on July 2nd, there was another one. And this one, I'll give you a hint on that one, is a Hanshin player.
Oh, and see, I was in the right area then with Shinjo.
Yeah, you were going in the right direction. It was a Hanshin outfielder on July 2nd.
This is cycling out of control here. Hanshin player who would have had the speed to have a cycle, sort of. Oh, Kanemoto.
Nope.
No?
No, not Kanemoto.
I thought he had one. I got nothing. Got nothing. Coming up empty.
So the Hanshin player was Shinjiro Hiyama.
Hiyama. See, I would not guess him. All right.
Yes, he was July 2nd. July 1st had both Inaba and Muramatsu Arihito from Daiei.
Daiei, okay. Yeah, I remember him.
Going back the previous month, June 8th, Fukudome Kosuke from Chunichi at the time. Yeah. So another Hanshin connection there. And then on May 5th, 2003, Jose Ortiz of Oryx. So it was a big year for cycles that year.
No, not for me.
Well, see, I was the opposite. That was 2003 was my last year living in Japan, and you know, I go back frequently, but that was kind of the peak of my fandom of MPB because I was living in Osaka. Hanshin was killing it that year. So.
I see. All right, I have a quick trivia question for you. We're exchanging trivia this week since Patrick doesn't have to be on that often. We want to
see if you embarrass me now. So.
It's not about embarrassing. We are sharing knowledge. All right. What foreign-born player is the only import with 3 consecutive home run titles?
Alex Cabrera.
You know, that's probably a good guess, but he didn't do it.
3 consecutive home run titles.
That's correct.
Foreign-born. I'm usually really good at the foreigners. So I couldn't be Randy Bass. Is it Boomer Wells?
No, it is not.
Okay, give me one more. So I'm thinking back to the 60s or 70s. I think it's not somebody from the 60s, unless it's a Pacific League player.
Well, no, not 60s, not 70s.
So probably 80s or 90s. Cromartie didn't hit that many home runs.
No, nope.
It wouldn't be Bass.
He won two in a row.
Bass won two in a row.
Yeah.
That would probably be 85 and 86.
That's
or 84
correct.
And 85.
Yeah. 85, 86.
Yeah.
Probably goes without saying.
Jeez.
Yeah, I know. This is a good one. And you're just gonna break down and cry when I tell you.
Yeah. It's not Tuffy Rhodes.
It's not Tuffy Rhodes.
Okay. I throw up the white flag.
It is Orestes Destrade.
Oh,
see,
yeah.
I told you. Look, he's breaking down and crying, people.
Yeah, the tears are streaming down. Yeah, I should have known that one.
Yeah, 19.
That was funny because my wife and I were just talking about Cebu at dinner last night from the 80s.
Wow, okay. So 1990, 91, and 92. And the reason I brought that question up is because I looked around and I said, you know what, Coco Ballantyne has a chance to win four consecutive home run titles. I wonder what other foreigner has done that. And I checked the books, and that's how I came up with that question. And he hit number 30 tonight, and they really didn't mention it. They didn't talk about it because there was so much other news going on today. But I don't know that any other foreign guy has hit 30 that many years in a row. Their first four, starting with their first year in Japan. But we'll have to look that up. But yeah, pretty impressive. So yeah, Orestes Destrade. All right.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. All right. So I went out on Saturday and I got to talk to the big closer for the Carp, Cam Michelio. He's in his third year. He's got 21 saves. He closed out 27 games last year and he had 21 saves, I believe, his first season. And that's mostly because Dennis Sarfati, who was the closer at the time, got injured and wasn't able to continue. And they slid Cam into that role. And he fit in nicely that year. He's having a good season this year. He's allowed slightly fewer hits and walks per inning as he did the first two seasons. So he's getting people out. And, of course, I noticed that, and I've been wanting to talk to him. In fact, I bumped into him earlier in the season at Jingu, and I asked him about it, and he gave the same answer that he gives in the interview, which is, you know, nothing in particular. I'm just, you know, I think part of it is just being in Japan this long and seeing what the batters are doing and seeing and making the adjustments without thinking because he's trying to get them out, and he knows what their approach is a lot of times. And I think he's just used to being in Japan, and that's the thing. And you'll hear him say in the interview, you know, he's only got 22 strikeouts and 39.1 innings to be exact. He's not a strikeout pitcher, even as big as he is. And he throws fairly hard, but he says, hey, look, I like to get ground balls. I like to get quick outs, and that's how you do it. So I think the Stars, the Bay Stars, they had a series over the weekend, and the Stars had been shut out the first two innings, so I think the first two games. So I think they just took out some frustration on the Carp pitchers tonight, and they won big on Sunday night. But Cam also had to pay the price. He came in for two-thirds of an inning in the game and gave up a home run, and he allowed some runs, so that was unfortunate for him in that particular game. But he's been really good, and we tried to find a little quiet place off on the side in the back and away from the field noise just before the game. And of course, passersby were making their presence felt during the interview. So it wasn't exactly the quietest thing to start off with, but it was a fun interview. And I think even the last comment he made to me, which made me want to run and hide, pretty funny. So look for that as we check out the conversation. All right. We're here with the mascots of the Bay Stars, along with Cam Michelio. Yudoshima Carp, thank you very much for joining us, man. We appreciate you being
here. Thanks for having me.
All right, so you have 20-plus saves this year as a closer. Your numbers really show, though, that you're having a better season than you had in the past. What's been the difference for you this year?
I've been trying to think the same thing and go back what I've changed, and I don't really know that I've changed anything. I might have had a few more lucky breaks here and there.
I bet you say that to all the guys.
I do, yeah. But, I mean, honestly, I think I just maybe have a couple more ground balls that are, you know, infielders get double plays on, and, just a couple more lucky breaks, which can mean a lot, you know, huge. Numbers-wise for a reliever.
Yeah, I mean, it looked to me like you've had more 1-2-3 innings than I've seen you have in the past.
Yeah, I think maybe I have. I'm not a strikeout pitcher by any means. I never have been. I don't think I ever will. I just, you know, try to get ground balls and get quick outs. And I do that by getting ground balls and, you know, let the defense do its thing.
And the defense has been pretty solid. We always talk about this, and now Kikuchi at second and Tanaka at short have really made a difference for, I think, the pitching staff here this season.
Yeah, they've been huge. With the range that those two have combined really helps everybody out here. Especially at home, the ball gets, can come off the bat kind of hot sometimes, but, you know, you get come off a road trip where you're playing in a place like this, the reads are way different. And they're getting good reads off of everything, ground ball wise. They got good hands, you know, they're fast to the ball, good throws, you know, they don't make too many throwing errors, you know, they're pretty solid defense.
Okay, all right. Now, you had a reliever, Ichioka, who really impacted the team earlier. He emerged and came on and did really good work from the bullpen, but then he got injured. So what was his impact coming in and coming on like he did, and then what's been the result with him?
Well, his emergence was a bit of a surprise, I think, to everybody, maybe even including himself, because, I mean, he's always been a little bit of a hyper, kind of a nervous guy. And so, I mean, he probably shows a bit of it when he's on the mound. You know, during the games, he's jumping around, bouncing around.
Right.
Swinging his arms around all the place. But he's
a spaz.
He is a bit of a spaz, but yeah. But he loves it. And his emergence was awesome. You know, he was a, you know, key role, key player to the bullpen. And it's a shame we lost him. But there have been other guys in our bullpen that have stepped up and taken in that, you know, that spot and done real well with it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's a luxury for the manager to have a guy to go to when the starters maybe are not as sharp as they should be or maybe could be. Or was he a really good situational guy as well?
Yeah, he did pretty good. I know when he was doing his thing, when he was doing real well, I was actually on the DL, and he was filling in for me and doing, you know, his thing. So situationally, he was doing good as a setup, which we've all seen. And then when I left, he did a good job in the closing role. So situationally, I think he had, you know, locked down pretty well. He was doing good.
Okay. Now, the Carp have a lot of young, good starting pitchers who have won games on the top team this season. Who's the best of them and why?
It's really hard to tell because...
Yeah, but that's why I'm asking you. You're a professional.
Yeah, well... it's hard to
He's
say.
He's scratching his head now, folks.
Yeah. There's a few guys that are they're quite a bit different at their age. We got Osero, who's a little Mikan-esque. He's got a little more velocity than some of the other guys, perhaps.
Mikan-esque.
A little bit. He's still really young, and Mikan's really, you know, he's pretty fine-tuned, and he can throw everything for a strike where he wants to. So. Osera's close. He's young. You know, he'll learn how to do it. Bit of an up and down year for him. Some of these other guys have, you know, filled the roles where they needed to real well. Jeez. Any one guy in particular you're thinking?
Me? No, I'm asking
you.
Obviously, I like Osera.
Yeah.
I think he was really good at the start. I think the season is long, and he probably needed some rest, so they're giving him some rest in between starts. I don't know. I'm guessing. But
it's been kind of a whirlwind for quite a few of the starters this year.
Yeah, but I like the work Alan Pretty did early on, and Toda, the guy came on and won some games for you guys.
Yeah. Well, even now, the emergence of Fukui again.
Right. Reemergence.
Reemergence. Yeah, I guess. He's done really well. And,
yeah, he's excellent. I don't think there's any more they can ask for him.
Expected either. He seems like he's matured on the mound. He can keep his composure a little better. Make better pitches, smarter pitches, and just control the game, pace of the game in his own head a little better. And I think he's got what maybe Osera might be missing. The keeping composure, keeping things from happening too quickly in his head, I guess. And thinking things through and not making a bad pitch or, you know, stuff like that.
Okay.
I think each one has what the other one wants at this point right now. So it's kind of a hit or miss, which one you think is a little better, which one is it's really hard to explain, but I think I'm touching on it.
That's why, you know, I had the dilemma, so I figured I'd ask a guy who's seen a little bit more and seen a guy who's worked with him and seen him practice and throw and all that stuff. But, yeah, I understand the problem. I mean, I really like what Alan Cuddy did early in the season, but, again, they're all so young, and it's a long season, and it's their first experience going through it, so it takes a while to get used to it.
It does, yeah.
Now, you had a recent series with the Yomiuri Giants. You guys got swept.
Mm-hmm.
And we see that you have good defense, good pitching. You have great speed. You know, probably could use a little bit more power. It'd be nice to see Brad come back up and be productive. But should we take more out of that series than he just got swept in three particular games?
I mean, more could be read into it, I suppose, but we did play some pretty good games against them. It's not like they were sloppy blowouts or nothing.
Mm-hmm.
They were pretty close games. Last one was a 1-0 game, so there was some good baseball being played. But it's the Giants. For some reason, everyone, I don't know if it's just can't get over the hump of, I don't know, the name of the Giants or, you know, what they represent or whatever it is. There's just always that invisible wall or something that they put up where it's just hard for us to, you know, to get through it. But, yeah, you touched up on Brad being gone. And just his presence would have probably helped us out a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because at the moment there aren't too many guys that can just punch out a long ball. And,
right.
I mean, Rosie's been doing it and doing it well lately.
Yeah,
but,
right, yeah.
Which is Brad, having him stand up there makes people kind of just scared. Even if he's gone 2-for-40 or, you know, something like that. So it's,
I get it.
Yeah, there's a few things that we're missing that maybe could have, you know, swung the series a different, you know, a different way, but yeah.
Yeah, it reminded me of the sweep that they put on you in the playoffs last year, and I thought, you know, again, Carp competed well, but couldn't, like you said, get over the hump, and it was kind of, you know, as a fan, you want to see the place go down to the very last pitch of the season, and
definitely,
and so. And we were hoping, at least I was watching it, hoping that you could, you know, make the race really interesting, get back on top maybe, or get to second place, and you guys ended up falling farther behind. But Brad Slump, how has that impacted the Carp?
Well, you can tell the lineup's been, you know, mixed around quite a bit since he's been gone. But, and then also, as you said, Rosie's been doing his thing and kind of not really filling shoes, but, you know, doing a pretty good job of filling that role in the lineup.
Mm-hmm.
But
cleanup a lot, yeah.
Yeah, hitting cleanup. Yeah, he's done well. And just like I said with Brad, his presence, everyone's just terrified of him. You know, he's a big, ginormous human up there who's going to hit the ball at 1,000 feet.
Right.
So it's something we'll hopefully get back soon. And he, you know, he gets out of that little slump that he's in. But, I mean, it's baseball. People go through it. Everyone does it.
Yeah, we know. So, we've seen it. All right. So, you know, I really had Osett as the rookie of the year. But the way Tanaka has come on for you guys, like I said, I was telling you before, he wasn't in my radar. Which one would you pick for rookie of the year?
Well, I think the way Tanaka's been doing his thing out there, he's making a good run for it. His defense is outstanding. You know, he's hitting the ball in key situations and, you know, just helping us win games, which we really need. And he's doing that day in and day out. I think just with his consistency, he's been doing it with. I would probably say he's got the edge there.
Yeah, I was, you know, he certainly has changed my mind because I didn't expect this. And like I said, he didn't play as much in the first 7 weeks or so, first 6 to 7 weeks. So he started playing every day.
Yeah.
All right, last question, and we'll let you go. I know you guys got a game today. What do you think about Masahiro Yamamoto of the Dragons winning a game as a starter at 49 last night?
It's amazing. I just can't imagine how my body would feel at age 49, let alone winning games. But it's really impressive. You know, hats off to that guy for still doing it. And not only is it a physical grind, but it's a mental grind too. And to see that he's still doing it at that age is amazing. I mean, he's the same age as my dad. My dad just turned 50.
Okay,
like,
well,
2 months ago.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I'll be turning 50 in November, so thanks a lot for that.
yeah.
All right, so we will wrap it up here. Thank you very much for joining us. We appreciate the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right. All right, thanks a lot, Big Cam. We really appreciate it, man. It's good seeing you and good chatting with you.
Yeah, it's always great to hear from Cam. You know, very insightful. You know, very smart approach to his craft with, you know, not being tempted to strike guys out and get the grounders. it's a great asset for the Cubs bullpen.
Definitely, definitely. Yeah, and I like that. I mean, it's hard to want to pitch to contact, but when you realize a lot of these guys are trying to slap the ball anyway and they're not really looking to take you deep, maybe that's a little bit more – it makes you throw strikes. Not that you want to throw the ball over the middle, but obviously you're not so worried about them taking – a lot of the guys taking you deep. So anyway, what stood out for you in the chat?
I thought he was quite diplomatic in answering your question about which of the Carps young pitchers have stuck out to him. You know, he kind of said something positive about each of them. So he must be a great teammate is what I thought.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean – I know it's a hard question, and I remember Michael Westbay tearing me up for asking questions like that before, Michael thinking that I hadn't settled on my Rookie of the Year vote or MVP vote, but I really want to know what these guys think about their teammates and if they're willing to talk to you about them, and it gives you some insight. As you said, yeah, he's diplomatic, and he's looking at the one, or he won't say one particular player, and he's picking them all out and saying nice things about them, but in the end, I mean, when we talked about Ichioka, Ryuji Ichioka, the reliever, he wasn't so diplomatic about him. He just about threw him under the bus. And I said, geez, you know, he's a hyper swinging his arms around all over the place. You're calling the guy a spaz.
Yeah, he calls it like he sees it. I like that he was very complimentary to Tanaka, because Tanaka, the shortstop, has kind of come out of nowhere for me this year. You know, first year rookie, third round pick.
Yeah.
And he's done a great job, filling in for Tsuyoshi. So, I mean, it also kind of jumps out at me, how good the Cubs draft was last year, getting Osera in the first round and Curry in the second and Tanaka in the third.
Yep.
So that was sort of another hidden sort of comment in there that was insightful to hear.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about the draft, you talk about Tanaka, and I that's why I asked him. I said, hey, look, which one of these guys is impressing you? And obviously he works side by side with Osera, but when he gets on the field, there's Tanaka back there making plays. So, you know, which guy has had an impact for him? And yeah, he compared Osera to Maeda, Kenta Maeda, which is a tough comparison. I don't think you can compare a first year guy like that and say, hey, you know, what did he say? My Ken-esque. And I thought that was interesting, but you have to think that they have to be preparing to have an ace when Kenta is gone, when Maeda leaves, because we know that he wants to go to the States. We see the scouts here all the time. I don't know if you've seen him in some of the highlights that you've seen.
Trying not to pay attention.
the scouts are just all over him. And, I talked to one recently, and they said, yeah, you know, we'd like him to be more aggressive with the fastball and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, they're already picking out the holes in Kenta Maeda's game. But I think when you think about, and like I said, Osera had been, he had a really good first month. And then after that, he kind of leveled off. He was still managing to win some games and at least keep him in the games. And then he just fell off. And I think they just wanted to get him some rest and get him revitalized and get him back out there. And then they did. And, you know, he hadn't pitched for a while. And then he's been making he made a few starts recently and pitched his first shutout in this three-game series over the weekend against the Bay Stars. Got his first career shutout. And it was excellent. And he was great in the ninth inning. I mean, he was throwing hard still. He was spotting fastballs. He looked good, so that stuff was really good. I liked it too. What did you think about what he said about the Giants? Because obviously, I asked this question to Randy Messenger in our last interview, and I really want to know what these guys are going through and what they're experiencing on the field when they're playing the Giants. Because it looked like to me the Giants that the Carp played and got swept in a three-game series with the Giants last week, and it just looked like they weren't playing the Giants on the field. They were playing the image of the Giants or something else.
Yeah, there might be something to that. I actually didn't see any of the games in that series, but just looking at the scores, the first game was kind of a blowout, and the second two were closer. So, you know, it's a case where the Giants have a lot of highly paid veterans, and the Carp have a lot of younger upstart guys that are in their first couple of years of contribution. So, you know, I think there might be something to that. You know, it's just sort of a rites of passage, I guess. You know, you gotta beat these guys. And they did play them competitively in the playoffs last year, but they didn't win a game. So, it's a hurdle for them to get over. I think on the season though, I think they're, not too bad against the Giants overall.
No, they're not.
Yeah, they're 9-10 with a tie.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, the difference between these two teams is really interleague. Head-to-head, they've been about evenly matched. And the Giants, I think, were like 16-8 in interleague, and the Carp were 10-14 or something.
Mm-hmm.
And in standings, that's the difference.
Yeah, obviously they're playing them close, and we expect them to play it close. I said when we look back on this team, this Carp team, in maybe 5-6 years, we're going to say, you know, this is a really talented team they had at this point. And yes, some players are still in the development stage, but they're contributing. And so when you get out there, it's a mindset. You know, for me, it's a mindset. You've got to want to just kill the guy. And, you know, I like what he said. There's an invisible wall. He said, we didn't have these sloppy blowouts, but we weren't able to win. And, you know, if he admitted that there's something there, that guys are getting tight, and we heard this again in the Messenger interview where he said guys got tight late in the game when they had control of it, you know, I think it's a mental block. And, you know, you've got to want to outwill the other team sometimes. I mean, it's not just about, you know, making a play or getting a hit. It's like, you know what, we've got to do whatever we have to do to win, because that's the way the Giants play. You know, they're willing to do whatever it takes to win. And so you have to, like I said, you've got to outwill them. And you've got to come in. I don't think you can come in armed with confidence alone. You know, you've got to come in and bring some kind of, they have some mystique, so you've got to bring something. I don't know what it is, but this fight is Rocky, Eye of the Tiger mentality. Something, get some motivation somewhere, because, of course, the games are going to be close. We expect them to be close. And just like you said, they played three good games against the Giants at Tokyo Dome in the playoffs last year, and they came away with their pockets flipped out inside out. There was nothing there. And that's, you know, that's the difference. And yeah, obviously, you know, with Brad Eldridge slumping the way he is and him not being there, that probably affected their lineup and what they, maybe their approaches at the plate, because in the last game, Hirokazu Sawamura of the Giants shut him out, and they had some opportunities to make some plays and get some guys over and get guys home in that game, and they just froze up. You know, they just literally just couldn't get it done. And yeah, I hate this. I hate to seem like a Dragons fan, but the only team that seems like it can win against this Giants club, especially when they're at home in the playoffs, has been the Dragons. They've done it twice.
Well, we'll see if there's a change this year. I mean, it would be great for the Carp to get Eldred back. He had some good games against the Giants early in the year, and his untimely slump in August, you know, really couldn't have come at a worse time. He was probably the first half MVP for me. So, and getting him back into the lineup and getting that thread of power there, you know, who knows how that would impact these close games. And, you know, a guy like Sawamura was a bit younger himself. So, you know, it's September. It's always a great time of year for baseball, and we'll see what happens down the stretch.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, you brought up a point that I wanted to make as well, because you probably heard me argue with Jim about the fact that you have some big monster guy in the lineup who other players try to set up and get the game into their hands. And I've argued with him about how important those guys are, and I don't think he believes me, but to hear Cam say it, and to even say, hey, the way he described Rosario, because we look at Rosario's production and we say, hey, he's filling in fine. But you hear a guy like Cam and say, hey, he's okay, but he's no Brad. You know, he's not this big intimidating figure, and, you know, he's got a great swing, but I think that, you know, you could tell by the way Cam just referred to him and talked to him about it. Kira Kaiahue was also out talking to some scouts and before the game on the field, and he said, look, we've got the guy still leading the league in home runs and RBIs, and he's been on the farm for basically a month, and, you know, it's costing us to not have him up. And you can hear it. You can hear it in the way they refer. They want this guy up. They want to get the games in his hands, and they feel comfortable if they can do that. And like I said, when I'm picking a MVP, that I want that guy who comes through. You know, the numbers are important too, because it shows consistency. But I want that guy who everybody wants to get the game in his hands, and they do, and he comes through. that's your MVP for me. But, you know, we can argue about MVPs. I think Jim and I will if we get another
chance. Yeah, that's coming in another couple months. So I think, you know, I think Brad still has a case, actually. Let's say Brad came back up today and had a great September, and you could still make a good argument for him. You know, let's say he's got 33 home runs now. Let's say he somehow gets to 40, and the Carp upset the Giants and win the title. You know, that's your MVP for me. Either him or the other guy who I think has a good case is Kikuchi.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, that's great that you brought that up. I think that, you know, I was thinking as I was standing out there waiting for, you know, to do the interview with Cam, I'm like, well, who else on this team can we give this MVP to if this team comes back to win? And I looked around, and then right then Kikuchi was walking off the field. I'm like, well, there's the guy, because he's come up with a bunch of big hits, a bunch of big plays, running the bases, whatever they needed. He's been there for them. So, yeah, he's a great pick for MVP. I would definitely put him in the conversation. I don't know if other people will vote for him or not. Probably not. But he did well. He's been doing well since. It just looked like he got a boost of confidence at some point, and he's been playing like that ever since. And this kid, Kosuke Tanaka, also at shortstop, has done the same. And like I said, I think we're really going to be talking about this team as being one of the most talented teams in the league for the next, you know, 5 to 6 seasons, if they can keep most of the, you know, and they can keep a lot of that pitching staff together, and I think they can. Most of the guys are young, so they did win that series, the weekend series with the Bay Stars, and they had 2 shutouts, and then they got their brains beaten in on Sunday. But it happens. It happens.
Yeah, DeNA has a good lineup. I mean, they're going to do that every so often.
Yeah, they scored 11 runs in the series. They just did it all in one game. Got to learn to spread.
It's the story of their season.
Yeah. All right, so now I want to talk about Atsunori Inaba of the Hokkaido Nippon Ham Fighters. And he announced on Tuesday that he'll be hanging it up after the season. And basically he said in the press conference, you know, look, a lot of things that older players, guys in their 40s say, I can't do the things I used to do at the plate. He said, you know, he can't hit the ball the way he wants to hit the ball with the kind of authority that he used to hit it with. And I think he's had a great career. When he announced his retirement, I put it on Twitter. And now here's a guy who hit his first pro at bat. He hit a home run. He's not a great power guy. He never won a batting title, never won a home run title, never really won any titles. I think he led the league in hits one time. And I love the story that Alex Ramirez told, and I'm not sure if you remember this, but he told the story when he joined the Swallows, and that first year he went out to play in the outfield, and he said, hey, I'm the right fielder. And they said, no, go to left. And Alex said, no, I'm the right fielder. So he was trying to take fly balls out there, and then Inaba and the other outfielders came out, and they took a couple fly balls, and Alex said he looked at him and he just started walking toward left field. And that was part of the, you know, the charm and the talent that Inaba had when he was with the Swallows. And, you know, he started out there, and yeah, you know, I put out on Twitter the other day when Inaba announced the retirement, I said, Hall of Famer or not a Hall of Famer? I threw it out there. I didn't get all that many responses, and all of a sudden I got some blowback, and then all of a sudden everybody just stopped talking. And I didn't know if they were mad at me or just mad, but I said, hey, look, I don't think this guy is a Hall of Famer. Someone said, I can't remember who it was, but they said, you know, he's the face of the franchise. He's been a great player. Why wouldn't he be a Hall of Famer? And I'm like, you know, that's not enough for me. You can be a great player and be the face of a franchise guy, but I mean, what have you really done? So I was hoping that we could talk about this, and I threw that question to you. So what's your criteria for a Hall of Famer?
Well, so personally speaking, I tend to value the peak performance of a player's career a little bit more than longevity.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, Inaba is interesting because he's had this 19-year career, and he only really got consistently highly productive in the second half of it after he moved to Nippon Ham. I think he became a much better player with Nippon Ham. He was good with Yakult, and he would have some good years, but he would also get injured, and he would, you know, have stints on the bench, and, you know, he was a good member of a winning Yakult team. They won I think three Japan series titles when he was there.
Yeah.
But you know, he didn't really become consistently healthy and consistently productive until his 30s with Nippon Ham. So, you know, I mean, he doesn't make it into the hall for me either. And I think in an email to you, I said he's a good, solid Mekyukai-er. So he's
a Golden Plate Club guy. Yeah. Yeah, with the 2,000 hits. Yeah, that was another Twitter follower made that point, said, hey, he's got the 2,000 hits too. I mean, what more could you want? And I'm like, you know, he said this one aspect as well. He said the thing that he's most proud of is that he was able to win all his managers' championships. And
that's something.
That's a big deal. I like that. But, you know, you don't win these things by yourself. It wasn't you.
Well, actually, if you want to make a Hall of Fame, this is a really flimsy Hall of Fame case. But when Inaba went to the Nippon Ham Fighters, so Nippon Ham was kind of a perennial also-ran team in their Tokyo days. You know, they shared Tokyo Dome with the Giants, and
right.
Nobody showed up to the games. And, you know, they were basically just an advertising front to get the name Nippon Ham onto the news, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, like Oryx is, too. And then they moved to Hokkaido and really started taking the baseball operation seriously. And, you know, they got Shinjo and they got Trey Hillman as manager, and they signed Inaba after he failed to get a major league contract.
Mm-hmm.
They got Fernando Seguinol, and they drafted Darvish, and fans started showing up to the game. And you know, they won two league titles in a row, and they won a Nippon Series as well. And they've been back to the Nippon Series several times since then. And it kind of coincides with the whole Pacific League getting better, because, you know, you had Rakuten emerging and they won a title last year, and Lotte got good.
Right.
You know, SoftBank has developed as a powerhouse in Japan. And basically the whole league is strong. Everybody except Oryx has won a title in the last 10 years or so.
Right.
And you know, the Pacific League, I think, is the more interesting of the two. And Inaba, you know, played a role in that. He had something to do with it. Couldn't say that Inaba changing leagues is the thing that turned it around, but it was one of many events that made baseball in Japan a bit better, I think.
Yeah.
So
I would agree with that. And I remember Micah Hoffpower and we would talk a lot, and we was on the show a few times, I think, in the first couple of years with us. And he said, hey, look, this guy's a star. And he goes out and works harder, or just as hard as the hardest working guy on the team. So you don't even know he's a big star. And he had a lot of complimentary things to say about Inaba. And I think that probably maybe he brought that work ethic over to the fighters, and the younger guys started to look up and say, hey, look, we need to work hard. And you're right. You know, you look at, he has never played a full season, but you know, he had 6-7 years of 120 plus games where he had never had that when he was with the Yakult Swallows. So, you know, he played a lot. He was very productive. But then again, here's a guy who never hit more than 26 home runs in a season. So I asked you about criteria, and I wanted to at least give mine. I just want a guy who's been really consistent, somebody who's really respected by and feared in a sense his play by his peers. And he's got some titles, some home run titles, some RBI titles, I don't know, stolen bases even, I mean, something, and some gold gloves, and multiple times, not just once. I mean, anybody could run into a good season, but, you know, to get that consistency that you want to have in the Hall of Fame, I think it takes, you know, a number of years built up and in succession. I don't think you have one good year and one bad year and then maybe two good years and a bad year. I think you've got to just be consistent, and I just don't see that with him, and I don't. I know everybody's caught up in the Inaba jump moment, but I don't want to be there. I like him. He's a great professional. Even when I tweeted, I said the very professional Atsunori Inaba has announced he's going to retire. I mean, you can't find anybody more professional and who takes his job more seriously. But I don't even, you know, I think five times as a regular, he hit 300 or better in 13 seasons. And those are the seasons in which he played at least 115 games. So we're not counting the ones where he didn't even play that much. You know, it's just, his numbers are not Hall of Fame worthy, impressive numbers. They're good, solid numbers. So I like what you said. He's a good, solid Golden Players Club guy. I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry you agree with me, because it'd be more interesting if you didn't. But I'm right there with you.
Yeah, he's good.
I didn't see you defending me on Twitter though when I said that stuff, and everybody, and I started to get the blowback, and nobody.
It must have been when I was asleep. Twitter is very ephemeral. You know, it's like I'll go back and dig it up if you want.
No, it's all right.
A companion for this show.
No, I need you to get my back then.
that's how it goes with Twitter. It's an ephemeral messaging system there.
It's true. All right, well, interesting. So then we had on Friday night, we had some history made. This was a big weekend for history being made. At 49, the Chunichi Dragons left-hander Masahiro Yamamoto, he became the oldest pitcher to start and to win a game in NPB history. He did a five and dive job. Now, I don't know if you saw highlights or anything from this game, but he was sitting on the bench after they congratulated him for his scoreless five innings. And that was five hits and one walk with two Ks. And, he got a little misty eyed on the bench. And I immediately started thinking, okay, well, he's going to retire. And this was his early retirement game start or something. I don't know. And that's what I started to think. And really he was near tears, and it was in the sixth inning. And then after the game, they gave him the game ball and he did the interview, got the flowers, blah, 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 you know, I was thinking this is one of these lifetime achievement starts. And, you know, it's incredible what he did. And he said at the end, I saw an interview. He said he wants to pitch next year.
Yeah, he was talking about pitching until he was 50. So yeah, you know, if he can do it, I say go for it. And I would say if I was a baseball player, you know, if I had the good fortune to be a baseball player, personally speaking, I would play until somebody ripped the uniform off of my back.
Oh, definitely.
But it would fire me, you know. It would, and you know, you look at a guy like Shingo Takatsu, who like, okay, I can't go into the majors. I'll be back in Japan. Okay, MPB is not interested. I'll go to Korea. Can't get a job in Korea. I'll go to Taiwan. Taiwan's done. I'll go to the Indy Leagues. Guys like that.
And then I'll play on Sundays with the, you know, in the tall grass, you know, in the parks.
Yeah.
With the beer drinkers. So,
yeah. With Yamamoto, they should have taken him down after he warmed up or something. So give the fans a chance to give him a standing ovation. Something like that. Would have been a better touch.
It would have been nice. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, but he said that he wants to pitch until he's 50, and you know, Chunichi should have room at least at Nigun for him. I mean, he would be squeezing out the young 40-year-olds on their team.
That's the young 40-year-olds. Well, that's what I said. Yeah, the Asakuras of the world. That's what I've written this blog post that hasn't been posted yet. And I basically am saying, look, you know, I was wondering when they were going to give him a shot this year, because I knew he hadn't retired, and I'd seen that he had pitched on the farm, and his numbers weren't really great. He hadn't done anything that worthy of a start on the first team anyway. But we all know that he wouldn't be motivated to pitch down there. So to get him a start on the first team would be, you know, at least if they told him, they set it up. I mean, you know, we're going to give you 2 weeks to get ready, and you need to do this, that, and the other, and show us that you can throw, and then we're going to give you five innings and blah, blah, blah. They could set the whole thing up if they had wanted to. But I was just wondering why he hadn't started. And then I started to think, yeah, what he's doing on the farm, though, is impeding some of these younger players. Remember, Ichiro Suzuki left the Mariners for the Yankees saying, quote, in his press conference, there are some young players who I'm standing in the way of, and blah, blah, blah. So you would think the same thing is happening with Yamamoto with the Dragons, that he's standing in the way of some of these young players getting some innings, because those innings on the farm are pretty important. But if they're going to keep him around, they've got to let him throw so he can stay in shape and throw on the first team. So if they're going to do this next year where he's going to come up and pitch in one or two games, I don't think it's worth it. I think you just, you know, say, hey, you know, it's been a nice career. You've got a great voice. You're going to be great in the booth. There it is.
Yeah, well, I suppose there's that point of view. But, you know, from his point of view, he's going to make it be their decision, I think. And, you know, you see a lot of guys do this. You know, some of this happened with some of the veteran Bay Stars players a few years ago when, you know, they basically let that 1998 team play on as long as it wanted to, and then they started sort of, you know, unceremoniously, you know, moving these guys on. And I think that's pretty clearly what's going to happen with Yamamoto. I mean, you know, he made a comment that I saw in the news that said, well, Shinji Yamanaka is the ace of this team. And that was when he was 28 years old, and it was 1993. So yeah. It gives you an idea of how long he's been around.
Yeah, yeah. When I came to Japan, I came in 90, and those two kids came into the league about the same time, these two soft-throwing, junk-throwing left-handed pitchers. And they were 1-2 in the league, it seemed like, all the time. And I would have thought that Imanaka was going to be the guy who lasted longer, and it was the chubby, chunky one who did.
Yeah, well, I mean, another thing, Imanaka's been gone for 15 years now.
Yeah, incredible. Yeah, and he had a good career. It's not like he was chump change. Yeah. Yeah,
he had a 10-year career and with some very great peak seasons.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's incredible how long Yamamoto has hung around, and he could have retired 5 years ago, 10 years ago, whatever. So you know, they'll have to rip the uniform off his back.
Yeah.
And it'll just come down to whether I think it's more about, you know, maybe he impedes a younger pitcher from getting the work in at Nigun, but maybe just having him around, you know, provide some insight, you know, and having like an additional coach on the staff.
Exactly.
You know, maybe he adds that kind of value. Yeah. I don't really know if he's that type of guy or not.
I would imagine just watching him, you would learn, because, and that was one of the things, and I didn't highlight that, and I'm just focused on the negatives, but there are a lot of positives to having a guy like that on the team, because as I know, when I would go up against younger players when I was 40, way back when I was 40, and I'd play them in basketball, and they'd find out my age after the game, and they couldn't believe it. They're like, yeah, I can't believe you're 40. And yeah, I'm like, yeah, young whippersnapper, bring it, you know? So, I mean, you can stay in shape. You can work hard. Just like Cam said, the mental grind is the thing that he can't even believe, but the physical, you know, the physical toll that it takes on the body, all that working out and all, you know, the training, and you have to do more as you get older to stay in shape. And he has always said, hey, I don't make my age an excuse. I work just as hard, if not harder, than the young kids. And he has always said that every time, you know, when he started setting these records for the oldest this and the oldest guy to do that and the oldest guy to throw a no-hitter and all that stuff, he's always said the same thing. Hey, it doesn't matter. You know, my age doesn't matter.
Yeah, when you're throwing, 135 kilometers per hour, you know, you got something else has to matter.
Well, I always said, because, you know, he throws a screwball, a sinker, a cutter, a slider, a curve, a slurve, everything, including the kitchen sink pitch.
Yeah.
Yeah, he throws that too. All right. Let's talk about this cycle that Renio Rosario had with the Carp on Tuesday. Now, this was crazy. He hits for a cycle against the Giants. He becomes the first player as a as per a trivia question that we had on the show, I think, earlier in the season this year. You remember that Michihiro Ogasawara was the last player to have a cycle, and that was 2008. And he was the 63rd player to hit for the cycle, and it was the 67th cycle overall. And the interesting thing about this was it was a reverse natural cycle. Now, you know about the natural hat trick because you're a hockey fan, as am I. But he had a reverse natural cycle in that he hit a home run first, then the triple, then the double, and then an infield single for the final hit. And this little roller that he hit to third base could have been an error. And I was fine with the scorer's decision. I didn't think it was a bad decision at all because it was close enough. He had little pudgy Shuichi Murata trying to come in and make that running play, grab and throw on the run, and he ends up throwing it away, and Rosario went to second, and they ruled it a hit and an error. It was really, really close, but I was fine with it. The thing about it was he should have had three home runs in this game.
He could have, yeah.
Yeah, he hits the triple was this ball that went to left, and off the bat I thought it was gone, and I couldn't believe it didn't go out. And we were talking about it before we started taping, and Yoshiyuki Kameya was the left fielder, and I think he had trouble. He was worried about the wall because he's just coming off of being injured, And I think he didn't want to crash into the wall. So he's trying to look at both the wall and the ball, and he didn't see either one of them.
And it took a, and that's not a stadium that they play in all the time.
Right.
It took a funny hop. You know, there's sort of this padded wall and there's like a chain link fence over it. And it took a hop off of the, between like the padding and the fence and kind of bounced up at a high angle over Kamei, and he kind of lost it for a second. And yeah, we were talking about this before recording, and you know, how often do you see a guy hit a triple to left field? So it's you know, this is maybe the cycle of destiny for Rosario. You know,
yeah,
it was written.
Yeah, the game was at Nagano Olympic Stadium, and they rarely play games there, so I think no one is used to playing in that stadium. So yeah, it did take the crazy hop. And then, he had already hit the home run. So the next at bat, he gets the triple, and then he hits this line drive to right center, in the third at bat, or the third hit, I should say, because I think he walked in between. And this thing was out too, but I think he hit on top of it too much, and it had downspin as opposed to backspin, and it stayed in the park. But this thing put a dent in the wall out there, so it could have been a home run if they were playing in Jingu or one of the other homer friendly, like Yokohama or something, the homer friendly Central League parks. But it stayed in, so it ends up being a double. And just really weird. So he was the first CARP player since Tomoaki Kanemoto in 1999, and that's why I guessed Kanemoto with the cycle, because he was the first CARP player to have that, and I had looked it up. And then the first import to hit a cycle since Julio Zuleta in 2007, and he was the fourth import to hit for the cycle in his first year in Japan. So interesting notes for Mr. Rosario.
Yeah, and he hit all of his extra base hits to different fields.
Uh-huh.
The homer went to center, the triple went to left, and the double went to right. So, he's a lot of fun to watch.
He is. Like I think we were talking before recording, and I said he's got a little bit of Puig in him, in that he's just kind of wild and fun. He's having fun out there, and you can see that. He doesn't run the bases like a wild horse. He just enjoys the game.
hopefully he doesn't hurt himself like Puig does.
Yeah. All right. Now another record that was done just today on Sunday was, my man. And then people are going to write in and say, John, you're addicted to Shohei Ohtani. And I'm going to say, yes, I am. I need some every day.
I'm addicted to him too. Yeah. I'm not even exaggerating. He's my favorite player of all time.
That doesn't, it's funny how that doesn't sound like an exaggeration.
It's not. I'm infatuated with Ohtani.
Not more than I am. He's mine. Get away.
I saw him first.
All right. So he becomes today on Sunday, he hit a home run, and it was his 10th home run. He becomes the first player in NPB history to win 10 games as a pitcher, of course, and to hit 10 home runs in the same season. Of course, it came in an 8-4 loss to Oryx, so I don't know how happy he could have been after the game. But, I mean, I just love this kid, man. He drilled this thing. I think you got to see replay.
Yeah, I saw.
Home run, right? This was his hardest hit home run. Of he's only been in the on the first team for almost 2 years. This thing was roped. This thing was he cracked that thing, man.
Yeah, dead center.
And straightaway center. I think it put a dent in the back wall at Kyocera Dome. They have a wall over the fence. It was a really impressive shot. Now, the thing about this is, of course, he was the first player in NPB to do it, so they had to start looking around, and they looked in the major leagues, and they said Babe Ruth, when he was with the Red Sox in 1918, was the only other player they could find who had double digits in wins and home runs in the same season. And he had 13 wins and 11 home runs. And I think that's totally reachable for our man, our boy, Shohei.
is he at 10 wins now or 11?
He's at 10.
I should know my favorite player's stats.
Yes,
but,
see, I knew I loved him more.
Yeah, okay. I concede. Well, I guess the difference between him and Babe Ruth, aside from the 100 years,
and the 100 miles an hour.
the just athleticism is that I think Ruth probably got most of those at bats when he was pitching and not playing the outfield. So Ohtani is kind of interesting. He usually DHs these days,
right,
and doesn't field. So he DHs between starts. It's just unbelievable if you think about it. So there's that slight difference, but I mean, it's a completely unbelievable achievement. And I loved him as a high school player, but when he was drafted, I was thinking, how long can he keep this up? The whole, two-way player thing. And I thought, probably at the end of spring training in the first year, they'll give up on it. But, you know, here we are 2 years later and he's improved dramatically in both sides of the game. And I mean, I think you can make a case that he's the best hitter on Nippon Ham, and you know, he's one of the best pitchers in the league. So just unbelievable player.
Yeah, I don't know about the hitting part, and he still seems a little awkward to me at the plate, and it's just because he's so tall. I mean, he's taller than Jim, and I think he's closer to 6'4". The thing is, they list him, I think, around 6'3½ or so, but I think he's taller than that, and I think he's. He's growing.
Yeah.
He's probably grown since the last time they measured him. He's still just 20. He's just in his second year. And before the season, yeah, I didn't think there's any way that they're going to stop him from doing both. What I'm kind of disappointed in is the fact that he hasn't been playing in the field very much at all. And of course, they don't want him to get hurt, and I think I said it last week's show. I think they're grooming him to start game one of the playoffs, so they really don't want him to get hurt, and that's why they're trying to be careful with him and not put him in the field, have him twist an ankle or run into a wall or run into another player. We've seen a couple outfield collisions already this season, a couple nasty ones here in NPB. So I think they want to just keep him healthy because he's going to be starting game one when they get to the postseason. So
yeah. He's the best asset in the league. So, limiting the risk is a good thing, but yeah, I mean, he's a good defensive player as well. So.
Well, yeah, I think risk assessment was part of what they're doing, but I also think, the fact that they want him to hit because before the season, Hideki Kuriyama, the manager, said, hey, look, you're not going to be able to swing the bat. We're not going to let you get in the batter's box unless you're doing the things that we've asked you to do as a pitcher. And that was one of the comments that he made to the media. So, he's got specific things that he has to do when he's on the mound so that he can get the opportunity to bat. So he's got to earn his at-bats. In terms of him playing the field, I don't know what the deal was with that. I didn't hear anything. I didn't read anything. But maybe I just didn't do enough homework. But hopefully they let him play can you imagine if – in the postseason, if he's doing both in a game, wouldn't that just be explode. I would literally explode.
Yeah. I think, whatever I was doing here in the Bay Area, wherever I was going, I would stay up all night and make sure that I was watching that game.
Yeah. And I'd probably be on Twitter with you.
Yeah.
Right there with you the whole time.
I will look forward to it. I really hope we get to see that. I don't think this is the year, but, hopefully next year.
I don't know. They might as well do it this year. I don't think they're going to win. They played the team that they'll likely meet up with in the postseason today with the Buffaloes, and they got spanked pretty good. The pitcher is probably going to see the mound. Uesawa was pitching today, so if they don't do it this year, I don't see why they would do it next year. But who knows? Who knows what's going on up there?
Well, you know, Nippon Ham was a last place team last year. And they've rebounded nicely to be, you know, a contender. And it happens that SoftBank and Oryx are both having great years, but, you never know. I mean, the Pacific League is really very balanced outside of SoftBank. And I think year after year, it just comes down to who plays the best. So who knows?
Yeah. Who plays the best down the stretch? Cause, some teams are playing well, some teams aren't. All right. One quick thing. I wanted to get your take on the PL Homer race. We've got Ernesto Mejia of the Lions, and then Mr. Chubbs, I like to call him, Okawari-kun, Takuya Nakamura. And we've got Willie Mopeña, who are locked in this three-way home run race. Today, I think it was Mejia who hit number 30, and he took a one-homer lead in this race. Who's your favorite in that race before we go here?
Well, my favorite, personally, my sentimental favorite would have to be Okawari-kun.
Yeah.
Just because I think that he kind of got robbed by the ball antics a couple of years ago.
Mm.
And, if Commissioner Kato hadn't been playing games with the ball, he might have broke O's record before Valentin got to it. So, you know, Valentin probably still would have broke it again, but, So he's my sentimental favorite. But Mejia has just been red hot.
Yeah.
You know, that guy, he's done it in the fewest number of at bats. So, you know, if you and I were to go to Las Vegas and put money on this, which I would never do, I think I would have to take Mejia.
Yeah.
But you know, my head says Mejia, but my heart says Okwari Kun. What about you?
I was going to take Mejia too, because I just like what he's done in such a short amount of time. And the thing is, he's got probably an advantage in that the teams that are going to try to, or maybe a disadvantage, I don't know, the teams that they're going to play that are on top, that are ahead of them in the standings are not going to pitch to him. Whereas Willie Moe is probably going to get more pitches to hit. So I think he's the guy who has the best chance of coming out on top, but I think I'm going to pick Mejia because I like this swing and I like what he's done so far here in such a short time.
Yeah, Willie Moe is to me kind of a mistake crusher. So when guys make mistakes, he makes them pay. I mean, he's probably the strongest guy in the league.
Yeah.
But, you know, he can get himself out too, I think, a bit more than, of course, I think Mejia has a lot of strikeouts as well, but, you know, you can keep the ball away from Willie Moe and he'll chase everything. All three of them are capable of doing it though.
I really think Pena is going to see some pitches because I think they're going to have to pitch him in certain situations and I think he's going to have his opportunities there, whereas maybe the other guys don't get as many. But as long as Okawari Kun is healthy and he's in the lineup and those two are together, I think they're going to help each other. So we'll see.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
All right, we will see. All right, well, thank you very much for sitting in. Fantastic job. It was really fun. I watched the sun come up in California, which is always cool.
Yeah, it's you watched the fog come up, really. That's all we got today.
All right. Well, thank you very much, and we hope you keep listening, and we hope to have you on the show again soon, maybe in the off season, maybe in the postseason.
Yeah, I'll be back anytime, and you know, I'll be up early.
All right. Thanks for getting up early. Cool. Anyone who wants to send us an email, please send it to yakyujohn@gmail.com, or you can leave us a note on the Facebook page. Thank you very much for listening, and enjoy your baseball. One World Sports is the exclusive home of the Yomiuri Giants in North America and features live coverage of all Giants home games. Please contact your local cable provider to find out how you can watch One World Sports.